Well, hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Browers Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. Hope everybody's having a blessed day today. Busy out here at Health Masters as always. And how are you doing today, Dad?
Austin, I'm doing absolutely wonderful today. I mean, the weather's August. It's Florida. It's it's humid, but it was pretty nice outside. I haven't seen any chemtrails in a few days, so that's kind of nice. So it's good. But I guess there's more bad news to bring you. My condolences to the family. Another famous naturopath, you know, like me, basically has been found dead. And she was 44 years old, and she was a huge, huge anti-vaccine advocate. She hated vaccines. Her name was Anne Baruch. And she basically was found hung, from what I can read, in her garage. Now, this lady was really well known. She'd been on Montel Williams. She was all about no vaccines for the kids. She apparently had cured herself from multiple sclerosis about 20 years ago when no one else could help her. So my condolences go out to her family and to her loved ones, and I feel absolutely awful for her. And basically, she was always talking about the vaccines, et cetera. And, guys, that's why I really need your prayers and also need your prayers, because we're out here on this one. I mean, we have not backed out of this. Now, whether or not she committed suicide or whether or not somebody basically drugged her and hung her, there's no way to really know that at this point, I don't guess, unless the autopsy can prove otherwise. But I don't know why someone who was 44 years old would suddenly decide to go in the garage and hang themselves. It's kind of like these guys who shoot themselves twice in the head and all the other kind of crazy things that are all declared accidents. I mean, it's nonsense. I mean, you can't. This stuff is real. It's very, very real, and we just need your protection and your prayers, and we thank you for that, because we're out here telling you guys stuff that we're not supposed to be talking about. You know, just quite frankly, we're not supposed to be talking about this stuff. We're not supposed to know this stuff, and we're certainly not supposed to be on the airwaves right now talking about it. So, again, my condolences go out to her family. Austin, what's your first story?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is a first health article I want to start off with today. Is basically researchers at the University College of London are stating conclusively that basically diet and sugar has a significant impact on mental health, and that high sugar foods actually contributes to an increased risk of mood disorder. Now, we've talked about this repeatedly. We've talked about this correlation repeatedly. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because every time researchers at big universities do research like this, I like to make it known to everybody so everybody can see it and they can confirm it for themselves, that we're not the only ones talking about this, that we're not the only ones saying that diet contributes to a huge role in your health, in your mental health, in your energy, in long-term everything. And so the connection between the two has always been technically semi-unclear for what scientists have to say, but now this new study was published in Scientific Reports. They concluded that mental illness, particularly mood disorders, could be directly caused by your diet. Surprise, surprise. They said the health risk involved in high sugar diets have been extensively studied, and they show that excessive sugar consumption is linked to a variety of health conditions such as diabetes, dementia, and obesity. Nevertheless, the researchers wanted to empirically determine if sugar intake could lead to depression directly. In order to answer this supposition, Annika Kupel of the UCL Institute of Epidemiology and Health studied data from 8,000 British adults who filled out detailed questionnaires on their eating habits and lifestyles since 1980. The participants were also asked to complete a mental health survey and were measured for their height and weight as well. After controlling for variables such as socioeconomic status, researchers found that men whose diets consist of sodas, cakes, and sugary teas had a direct 23% increased risk of experiencing an episode of clinical depression or anxiety in the following 5 years. And so they found, now they believe that the sugar can affect mood in multiple ways. They said additionally, excessive sugar consumption dramatically increases the amount of inflammation found in the body, and so this can also cause issues with depression. I was talking to Dad earlier, the other, when he was in the office, And I told him, I said, you know, I don't really eat bread much anymore. I can't. I said, for some reason, even if it's organic bread, I just feel more inflammation in my body when I eat large amounts of bread. And so I pretty much try and stay away from it. Occasionally, I may have a couple bites of pasta here or there, something if somebody's making something. But overall, in most part, I stick with pretty much lean, you know, organic chicken, eggs, green beans, vegetables, and a lot of fat, a lot of coconut oil, a lot of olive oil, and a lot of whole eggs. And overall, it's done pretty good at keeping my energy fairly stable, my mood fairly stable, and also, too, keeping body fat much lower than I was able to ever do before at eating, you know, moderate carbohydrate intakes. Now, I don't get the pump I used to get in the gym as far as with a large amount of carbs. Even if I do eat a large amount of carbs like sweet potatoes, I'll still get a much better pump in the gym than I do now, but it's much easier to stay leaner, and I've noticed my mood is much more stable. I'm saying all this is that that's why one of the first things I ask people when they talk about they're having issues with focus, with depression, with mood issues, I always talk about their water intake and their food intake, because those are the two biggest things you need to look at besides the application of are you on any medication. If you're not on any medications and you're having a lot of mood disorders, the first thing you need to address is your diet and see exactly what you're putting in your body, and then go from there. Cut out the high processed sugar foods, the white potatoes, the pastas, all the stuff that causes inflammation, and then on top of that start adding in the B vitamins and the cod liver oil, which also in turn help out with inflammation and elevate mood. But I like this article, Dad, because it basically is showing here directly that eating large amounts of soda and sugar and whatnot can actually directly link to cognitive disorders, including depression.
Well, one of the primary reasons it does that, Austin, is because of what it does with yeast overgrowth in the large intestine, and it really messes up the natural occurring acidophilus and the natural occurring, you know, probiotics that you have in your intestinal tract. There's a variety of them, a lot more than just acidophilus. That's why I take, you know, our acidophilus product every single day in my protein shake, because I want to keep my gut flora really, really, you know, taken care of. In fact, there's an article I want to read to you. In fact, it's funny you were talking about this today, because I want to bring up the same article, same type of stuff. It says that neuroscience now shows how the gut bacteria actually impact the emotions. It says it's becoming wild. This is an article by Anna Hunt. It says it's becoming widely known that gut bacteria influence much more than our digestive process. The bacteria living in the digestive tract impact our general health. Furthermore, scientists are now discovering this influence goes beyond physical health. And a study at the University of California discovered evidence that gut microbes affect our emotions. Specifically, they impact how we respond to fear. Isn't that interesting? Study proves the brain and gut microbe interactions. In their study, the UCLA researchers examined fecal samples of 40 women to identify their gut microbiome. In addition, these women were hooked up to an MRI scanner and then shown images designed to provoke an emotional response. The study identified two types of gut bacteria that potentially impact the brain areas associated with the mood and general behavior. First, the scientists found Prevalabilità to be common in 7 of the women. This group showed less activity viewing negative valence images. The hippocampus regulates emotions and consciousness and memories. On the other hand, bacterioids were present in about 33 of the women, and the bacteria cluster showed greater prominence in the frontal regions of the hippocampus. And it basically showed that women in this group were less emotional when viewing undesirable images. So, guys, this gut bacteria is actually finding a way to communicate through your brain through this electronic frequency that we've talked about. Because remember, the electronic frequency that we have around us, the electromagnetic field of the planet, goes through our entire body. This is why I talk about when you get filled with the Holy Spirit, it infuses you and goes through your entire body. The electromagnetic frequencies that our own body puts out from our heart rhythm and from the power that generates while it pumps goes through the entire body, and it causes all of the cells in our body with all of these interconnecting fields to talk to each other via the DNA. Remember, they're microtransmitters. They're like Tesla step-up transmitter coils, and they're able to communicate via frequency one to another. And that's what they're talking about here. When you have the wrong types of bacteria in your intestinal tract, you're more prone to be scared of things. When you have the right types of bacteria, you're prone not to be scared of things. Our bodies are wonderfully and intricately made. This is why when these guys come up and talk to me about how we crawled out of the swamp blog one day and turned into a human being, I tell them, I say, you guys are all idiots. I say, how can you possibly believe that? Our bodies are so complex. Our DNA is so complex that now the top scientists who aren't basically have about been browbeaten into believing this DNA stuff as far as from an evolution standpoint. These DNA scientists are all coming out and saying that evolution is impossible. We were created, which of course we've all known that. But guys, listen to me. Our entire body operates as a single organism connected to every single cell through frequencies and through nerve transmissions. Our body is a whole body. It works together. You know, you can't lose a body part and not have it affect another body part. I mean, you can't start losing hands and feet and not have it affect you. That's how our body is interacting with itself. That's one of the things that we have, that's one of the things that we saw in psychology. It's called phantom limb pain. And Austin, you've read about that in your psych training.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is, that's when a person comes in and they have a foot cut off or they lose a leg in an accident, they can still feel the leg. They still feel like it's there. In fact, sometimes they'll feel like it needs to be scratched, but it's not even there anymore. It's gone because the body still fills in the holes of where that limb was. If you read the book, The Holographic Universe, it talks about this in detail and the phenomenon associated with this. And it's really interesting when you start looking at how this whole thing is generated in this electrical field. We are an electromagnetic frequency. That's how God made us. That's why, again, it's so important to avoid your Wi-Fi signals. If you're going to sleep in a Wi-Fi signal at night, I suggest you unplug it so you don't have that signal going through your body. And you realize that your body is interconnected, again, even with the bacteria in your gut. So it's so important to keep your body in balance. And that's what you were talking about earlier, Austin, when you don't eat the bread. Because remember, the bread causes a lot of problems with people getting yeast infections. It causes a lot of people to bloat. I mean, they put yeast in the bread to make it rise, for heaven's sakes. I mean, all of these things I've learned over the years, especially when I was in bodybuilding back in college, you know, gosh, 40 years ago, 44 years ago, I learned that when I ate bread, I couldn't keep my body fat down. I couldn't do it. I mean, because it caused me to, I stored too much of those carbohydrates as sugar. And then when you store them as sugar, they turn into fat, and that's how the liver processes it. And I realized that I had to stay in a relatively lean intake of proteins and fats in order to stay in really, really good shape. And it's still the same thing for me for today. This is the biggest fallacy that we have. People think they can eat whatever they want to eat, eat as many carbohydrates as they want to eat, not get fat, and go run on the doggone cardio machine in the gym for 4 hours. Guys, you can't live like that. Number one, you pound your joints to nothing. You tear up your joints. You tear up your ligaments. You tear up your tendons. You can't burn off the calories. You just have to use the kind of calories that your body doesn't want to store as fat. When you put sugar in your body, especially fructose, high fructose corn syrup, now it wants to go to fat immediately and get stored. I mean, the body doesn't like that stuff because it's all got to be processed through the liver. So it's really important you stay with high fructose corn syrup and high glycemic carbohydrates, bread, pasta, rice, potatoes, except for sweet potatoes. They're low glycemic carbohydrates. And so if you stay with those types of lean meats and lean foods and just get used to eating that way, you know, every once in a while you can break the diet. You can do something a little bit different. But don't make it on a regular basis. The other night, one of the kids brought home some organic cinnamon rolls that you bake in the house, and all of a sudden I smell the thing of cinnamon rolls going through the house. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And I have to admit, Austin and I both caved in on that one. We both had a cinnamon roll. But there's enough of us in the house, so we ate the whole pack. There's like six cinnamon rolls, right? Everybody had a cinnamon roll. And I told the kids, I said, don't buy any more of these. I said, I don't need these. I said, if you want to get these for a birthday present or something like that, or for Christmas or for Thanksgiving or for Easter or whatever, and we're having a dinner here, and everybody gets a cinnamon roll, I said, I have no problem with that, but we don't need to be making this kind of stuff in the house because, quite frankly, guys, I'm human too, just like Austin is. It's too hard not to eat that stuff, especially when it tastes really, really good like those things do. So do it as a treat, not as a regular diet. That's why I always tell folks, guys, if you're going to eat real, real strict, you know, at least give yourself one day to eat something maybe a little bit not quite perfect, and it'll satisfy that need. But never get into the habit of eating the same things on an ongoing basis that are bad for you, because you can also develop that habit, and that sugar is like cocaine in your system. It's been proven, and makes you want to crave it and want more and more and more. In fact, quite frankly, if I had another cinnamon roll here today, I'd probably eat it too, Austin, but I'm not going to allow myself to do that because I don't want to gain weight and I don't want to store fat. It's simply not healthy to elevate your insulin like that. Good story, Oz.
No, absolutely. There's definitely a huge aspect as far as to eating, and that's why when I saw that article, you know, I mean, we got to touch base on that type of stuff because, I mean, this, it's so important. I feel like so many people know it, but I feel like the more we talk about it, the more we can kind of promote it more and really kind of get it online as far as getting everybody dialed back in. Because the truth is, in order for us to affect any type of change in the country, any type of change in the government, we have to have energy. We have to be effective. We have to be aggressive. We have to be able to know what we're doing, and we have to be able to have the energy to do so. And I've said that so many times. If everybody's just sitting on the couch, feeling horrible on a dozen different medications, you don't have much energy to do anything, much less go do anything. I mean, you don't really have the drive to go try and make change or try and wake people up or do any of that. So it's definitely something that it really needs to be addressed as much as possible. And that's why us here at Health Masters, we really try to bring out a lot of this information so everybody can get it as much as possible and, you know what to do and know the things to change. And so you have that idea. Now, also, too, there's another article. Magnesium has been a very popular product. Our magnesium oil has been on sale lately. And now there's another article now saying that magnesium now is one of the most important minerals in the body. They said it's a weapon against illness. However, most Americans are deficient in magnesium. They said it's great stress relief and it's improved with sleep. And so that's one thing that they said, the magnesium is actually one of the most relaxing minerals you can possibly do. So soaking in magnesium and taking in oral magnesium, like we have the magnesium glycinate, the magnesium powder, and then soaking in the magnesium tub with our magnesium Dead Sea salt is very, very effective. And, you know, we had Dave Hodges. Dad was telling me about that the other day. Didn't you say he was having some issues the other day and he jumped on the magnesium?
Oh, he's having a really bad back problem, in fact, real bad sciatic. He's afraid he's going in for surgery on his back. I mean, he didn't know what to do. And so I told him he had some magnesium oil he had never used that I'd sent him that we have. And I said, Dave, what you need to do is rub your whole back down, your whole sides down, everywhere around your hips down with this magnesium oil. I said, because what it does, calcium causes your muscle to contract. The magnesium allows them to relax. That's how the heart works. So what I told him what to do, I said, look, just go ahead and just take this magnesium oil and put it all over your back. He calls me back the next day and he goes, Ted, within 20 to 30 minutes, my back was fine and I was straightened up. I didn't have any more sciatica and I wasn't any pain. Now, let me explain to you how that works. You have what's called an inflammation cascade in the body. And the body, sometimes it'll get into a situation where it starts dropping dominoes. Let me explain to you what that means. If you have a circle with dominoes in it, and the dominoes are reset automatically, and that circle continues to circle and drop dominoes. That's like it's called a feedback loop in the body. And if the body gets inflammation into the system, it wants to cause, if it gets pain, it wants to have inflammation to isolate the joint. That's why things swell up, because it doesn't want you to move that joint. And if you can break that pain inflammation, you can stop the cascade which causes the inflammation. Now, what's interesting about that is that the more you inflame, especially like with your lower back, the less room your peripheral nerve roots have coming out of the spine and around the body, and they start getting impinged. And when that happens, you could have another feedback loop from that with the pain from the nerve, and it gets excruciating. I've had that happen to me before with my back, where you take sometimes you can take a painkiller and it'll stop that. Sometimes you can use the magnesium and it will stop that. And with Dave, he had already tried the painkillers and they weren't working for him. He used the magnesium, which allowed those muscles to relax. It stopped the pain cascade. Now I'm speculating now because I'm not Dave's doctor. But I know that within minutes he said that his back was no longer hurting and he felt he'd go out and play golf again. I mean, he was so bad. Now, is that going to happen to every single person who uses the magnesium? Probably not. But, you know, the way I look at this is that, you know, chronic pain, anything you can do to fix that or help eliminate it is worth a try, because the magnesium is really inexpensive stuff. And that's why I tell people, look, try the magnesium oil first. Soak your feet on a regular basis in the magnesium salts, because it makes a huge, huge difference. It really helps you to stay healthy, because magnesium is used in over 200 biochemical reactions in the body, and your body simply can't live with it. Magnesium is like the gasoline in your gas tank. Your body constantly uses it and burns it. Calcium is like the water in your radiator. It basically is recycled over and over and over and over and over again. You need a much, much more magnesium than you calcium. That's why a lot of people back in the 60s were saying, well, you need a, you know, a one-on-one ratio, 1,000 milligrams of calcium, 1,000 milligrams of magnesium every day. No. It's much higher than that on the magnesium and much lower than that on the calcium. That's one of the reasons that so many people have bone spurs, because they get too much calcium and their body doesn't know what to do with all that extra calcium. It gets deposited in the soft tissue and also gets deposited on top of the spine, causing bone spurs, which can push against the spinal cord, causing excruciating pain. That's a condition called spinal stenosis. You know, Austin, your mom had that for years, and it got worse and worse and worse, and we were able to keep it under manageable with cod liver oil and anti-inflammatory compounds. But then when she started using the magnesium salt baths and soaking her feet every day, those bone spurs completely and totally cleared up, and she no longer has that. She was getting a hump right there in her back between her shoulder blades, which is typical with spinal stenosis, and that's completely gone now. So I'm really happy for her on that. Oh, by the way, there's another thing you can do with autoimmune disease, and that's by healing your gut. A lot of autoimmune diseases are being caused by a leaky gut. And so there's some things that you can do if you've got problems with allergies, like with skin itching, etc. I know with me personally, I started using sauerkraut every single day on a regular basis, you know, at least one or two servings of sauerkraut, and it took about a month or so. I was having some problems with tomato allergies and real bad skin itching if I got the wrong types of foods, and I thought, this is ridiculous. And that's primarily from what's called leaky gut. But you could heal the gut if you do the right things to it, and sauerkraut's one of the best things. In fact, Green Med Info wrote an article on this, and I think this is really good, and I'm going to read you part of this, and it says, health begins in the gut. From a clinical standpoint, insofar as functional medicine is concerned, whether you present with rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, ulcerative colitis, or systemic lupus, the fundamental object is the same. Heal the gut. Here we go. Hippocrates discussed and understood that the gut was intertwined relationship in systemic health of the organisms. He said all diseases begin in the gut over 2,000 years ago. In fact, V.E. Irons says that death begins in the colon. Everything's about the gut. V.E. Irons was somebody in this past century. He lived to be over 100 years old. After all, covering a average surface area of 32 square meters, the size of half of a badminton court, the gut represents the largest interface between the external environment and the internal biochemical system of the body. Why is the gut so paramount in prevention and treatment of autoimmune diseases? If you're a savvy consumer of holistic health information, you probably already know how important your microbiome is in your gut. At any single moment, 2 to 6 pounds of bacteria reside within us. Following the advent of germ theory and the discovery of vaccination, scientists were under the impression that all bacteria were bad bugs, which is simply not true, and speculated that specific microbes were the causative agents behind particular disease entities. Ironically, it was rumored on his deathbed that Louis Pasteur, the father of immunization and pasteurization himself, admitted that it's to train the gut ecology, the biochemical compound of the gut, that matters rather than the infected pathogen. In other words, if you have a healthy intestinal tract and a healthy immune system, it doesn't matter what you're exposed to in most cases, unless some type of thing that DARPA put together or the boys at Fort Detrick cooked up, you know, like Ebola. Medications can also compromise the gut barrier integrity. Aspirin's really, really bad about this, especially any of the non-steroidal and anti-inflammatory drugs. They can actually cause you to have a perforated gut. We're talking ibuprofen, Motrin, Aspirin, Naproxen, all of these things are bad for your intestinal tract. In addition to inducing intestinal ulcers, increasing risks of myocardial infarction by a third, and doubling the risk of congestive heart failure, these NSAIDs have been also demonstrated to decrease concentrations of particular bacteria inside of the intestinal tract, which helps to heal the gut lining. So this thing just goes on and on and on. What's more, acid-blocking drugs or proton pump inhibitors, such as Prilosec or Nexium, used for gastroesophageal reflux disease, are associated with a decrease in small bowel beneficial biobacteria and a significant decline in microbial diversity within 7 days of beginning the therapy. In other words, the leaky gut and autoimmune connection is very, very real. The intestinal barrier is a semi-permeable membrane, which basically allows certain things to get in and certain things not to get in. These tight junctions are regulated by a molecule called a zonulin, as well as conformational changes in proteins. Now, when you start taking certain types of chemicals into your body and you start affecting this, it changes the size of this and allows a certain amount of foreign protein to be dissolved and absorbed directly into the bloodstream through the gut. That's what leaky gut syndrome is. This causes massive problems with reactions in the system, and it's one of the primary causes of autoimmune diseases. That's why it's so very, very important that you keep your gut super healthy. This is why I take the the living fuel every day with really high quality bacteria in it, along with digestive enzymes in it. And I also take my bacteria every single day, my acidophilus every single day in my shake, and I eat this fermented cabbage every single day. And I tell you what, guys, you stay a lot healthier. You don't have near as many colds. You don't get things like the flu, and your body feels really good all of the time. So, guys, it's one of those little things you need to do on a regular basis is eat some type of sauerkraut if you can handle the taste of it, because a lot of people simply don't like it. Sharon's got a great recipe for it in the new book we've got coming out. But, guys, it's one of those things. If you start doing it and you start feeling how good you feel, you'll stick with it the rest of your life, just like I've done. What do you think, Oz?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The sauerkraut's definitely a good option. That's, and the probiotics are great too. And that's why we carried in two different sizes. We carry the small formula, which is our standard probiotic blend. And then we have the probiotic 100 billion, which is the big boy. But a lot of times people can get away with just the regular probiotic blend because it's a very strong formula still. The 100 billion's a really good one is if you've been on antibiotics or you have issues where you're really trying to increase the amount of good bacteria in the body very, very quickly. That formula is awesome. Also, too, a new study. This is pretty wild now that the number of studies now are showing that the immunizations to HPV is not only insufficient at reducing overall HPV infection rates, the vaccines now are actually causing rare but more lethal types of HPV to sweep in, and they said they could be a devastating increase in HPV-related cancers now directly linking back to the HPV vaccine. This is pretty wild. Now, the biomedical research study, which was done basically by Markowitz, labeled prevalence of HPV after introduction of vaccination program in the United States, published last year now. And what it does is it goes in, the first study, it shows the Center for Disease Control own study, in which they show no net change in HPV infection rate after HPV vaccinations were introduced into medical practice. So the CDC now is blatantly admitting that the infection rate of HPV has not gone down at all since they've started vaccinating people with HPV vaccinations. However, if you start looking at the long-term side effects and the people that have been injured just on the books, there's literally tens of thousands of children and teenagers that have had significant, severe reactions to this vaccine, yet the CDC's own numbers are showing HPV has not gone down whatsoever since the vaccine has been introduced. Exactly. The study concluded that Markowitz said that the type replacement did not occur because the analysis of individual types showed no individual type with a significant increase. However, because the vaccines do clear the vaccine-targeted type, the lack of change in overall infection rate shows that the type replacement may be occurring, meaning that it may be preventing certain forms of HPV to basically go away. It's allowing other ones to come in and be even more aggressive. The second one, he said, he wrote in here in the second study, he said the percentage of non-vaccine HR-HPV types was higher than expected, considering that 8 HPV types formerly classified as low risk or probably high risk are in fact HR-HPV types, meaning they're high risk types that are non-vaccine forms, and they're showing up now more prevalent in individuals that have gotten vaccines for the HPV. So what he's basically saying is the individuals in a lot of cases that aren't even showing the bad side effects that we talked about now are now showing that they're still getting infected with HPV, except it's not even normal HPV. Now it's high-risk HPV that's non-vaccinated type. Pretty much what this is saying is this entire HPV vaccination is a giant scam. From the beginning, they knew it didn't work. They knew Gardasil had absolutely no clinical research backing it showing it worked whatsoever. They knew it had no clearance as far as safety whatsoever. They used a lot of these kids as guinea pigs to see what it would do in them, and then it started having premature ovarian failure. So not only did it start causing these kids to have no immunity to HPV, which was the whole reason to begin with, it started causing these girls to have full-blown ovarian failure at an early, early age, meaning they're not going to have kids again. They're sterile. So HPV is one of those vaccines that, with the Gardasil, I've been very vocal about it, and so his dad. The problem is I still hear of people, oh, I let my kid get this, or I gave it to my kid. The pediatrician basically demanded I give it to him, and they needed it. There's absolutely no legitimate reason you should be giving your child this vaccination whatsoever, in my opinion. You need to discuss with them about being basically Christian, about having the morals and ethics and not having sex till they get married, and staying away from a lot of that just bad behavior, and not having to get them injected with these shots, because the problem is it's showing now clearly that even the kids that are getting shot up with this dirty vaccine, it's still not protecting them from anything at all, which in my opinion, from the beginning, because we know from 1986 that the vaccine manufacturers don't have to produce anything that's safe, nor do they have to produce anything that works, and they're completely immune from any type of lawsuits. We know those three to all be fact. So they have no type of incentive to produce anything that's clean, produce anything that works, because they can't be sued for anything for any reason whatsoever. This is the issue we've run into with the vaccine manufacturers. This is why I've been so vocal in trying to get the 1986 Vaccine Protection Act completely stopped, revoked, vetoed, whatever you want to call it, get this thing shut down, because until then, all we're going to do is deal with pediatricians. They're getting kickbacks like Blue Cross, Blue Shield to fully vaccinate these kids that have absolutely no reason to be shot up with some of the most toxic vaccines known to man that in turn cause some of the worst side effects we've ever seen in recent history, and they still don't work. So I thought that was pretty wild, Dad, as we've talked about this before, but this guy basically just confirmed what we said and even said more now that they're starting to show up with these non-vaccinated high-risk HPV incidences now.
Well, the lead researcher for HPV, she came out at one of the top conferences for pediatricians and said they don't work, and basically advised her pediatricians not to inject their children anymore. Because I remember, what was it, 100 kids fully vaccinated that Blue Cross, Blue Shield kicks back to the pediatrician $40,000? I mean, it's some number.
Yeah, 200 of them, yep.
Yep, and then what ends up happening is if they don't have, if a certain percentage of them don't do it, those numbers drop off. So, I mean, they have to have a certain compliance rate of vaccinations. They don't get any money. That's why they won't take you as a patient, in my opinion, in many cases, when you don't want to vaccinate, because they don't want to lose the compliance numbers and lose all these big bonuses they're getting from all these different manufacturers, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield or other insurance companies. I mean, think about it, guys. If you've got 1,000 kids in your doggone thing and you're getting, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in money from the insurance companies because you're fully vaccinating, and if you have a bunch of kids coming who don't want to be vaccinated and you lose all that money, you're not going to take them as a patient. You say, I'm not going to take you. I'm going to lose too much money.
Yep.
If I take you, they drop me below my threshold, and I'll basically not have the ability to do this. I remember years ago I talked to one of your friends, and they were saying that their insurance wouldn't cover the pediatrician expense unless the children were fully vaccinated. In my response to the person who's a good friend of ours, I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll pay for your children to go to another doctor, and I'll cover the entire cost of the visit, which is like $50 at a time. I'll pay for everything for the child because I care enough about your child not to do this. And then the truth came out. He simply decided not to follow our suggestions, and he decided to vaccinate, and he didn't want to admit that to us. And so it's just one of those things, guys. This is a decision that you have to make with your spouse before you have children. In fact, quite frankly, I'm going to say one more thing. If you're not married right now and you're dating somebody and you're seriously considering marrying that person, or your children are doing that, they need to have this discussion before they get married. And they need to have discussion with their parents before they get married, because I've seen grandparents go absolutely ape wild because they didn't want to get the kids vaccinated. I've seen it, and I've seen them the opposite. So, I mean, I've gotten the letters. Can you please help us do this? Can you please talk some sense into our kids? And I'm like, my response is no. So I get involved in this. I said, this is something everybody has to decide on their own. You know, if you want to vaccinate your children, that's entirely up to you. If you don't want to vaccinate your children, that's entirely up to you. All I say is this. Do the research yourself and watch the movie Vaxxed. Do yourself a favor. Instead of arguing with your grandkids or whatever, ask them when they watch a movie that was released on the big screen and tell them that you want to give it to them. It's like $7.99 now, Prime. You can get it to you in 2 days or whatever. We talk about Amazon, how horrible they are, and here I'm promoting them. But the truth of the matter is, you can get the video from them very, very quickly, the DVD, and let the people watch it. And for that, I'll make an exception with Amazon. By the way, a gold medalist has actually died of cervical cancer. after she had been vaccinated with the HPV vaccine. This is out of Windsor.
There you go.
Silver medalist Sarah Tate and Kate Hornsey of Australia celebrate with their medals after competing in the World Fair. And now we find out that Sarah Tate has died with the battle of cervical cancer after she received the HPV vaccine. She was only 33 years old. This HPV vaccine did absolutely nothing for her, and she still came down with cervical cancer. You know why? Because the stinking thing doesn't work. All it does is cause premature ovarian failure, seizures, and all kinds of other horrible side effects. Just look up HPV vaccines horror stories. Just Google it, and you will get a plethora of people telling you, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. What do you think, Austin?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, that's why I tell everybody, as you just said, make your own decision on it. Don't let somebody pressure you into either decision. You know, listen to the research, though, and listen to your gut and listen to facts. If you actually are looking at the real unbiased research and you're talking to the individuals that have seen what actually happens with this and not just the paid-for pediatricians. It was so funny. Years ago, I talked to somebody and I was discussing with them vaccinations, and they said, well, yeah, I think we're definitely going to vaccinate. We decided, you know, we weren't sure what we were going to do. And then, you know, my wife's sister, she works for a pediatrician. And, you know, after we talked to her, it made no sense not to vaccinate because, you know, there's basically no side effects at all. There's nothing ever bad that happens from vaccinations. But if they don't vaccinate, then there's all these things that they can catch and all these bad things that can happen to them. And they can eventually die from catching some of this stuff. And I kind of looked at him with this just like dumbfounded look on my face, and I said, you are joking, right? And they said, no, absolutely not. She told us all about it. She said, you know, there's all these people that, you know, are basically vaccine deniers, and that, you know, all these kids that don't get vaccinated are basically they're causing issues and they're causing a danger to kids that are vaccinated. I said, wait, hold up there, hold on a second. I said, but you just told me that if they're vaccinated, you know, it protects them from all this stuff. They're like, yeah, that's why we want to vaccinate them so they can't get this. I said, Well, if they're vaccinated and they are protected from all this stuff, why could you care one single bit if another kid's not vaccinated? Because if your kid's vaccinated, that means he's fully protected, 100% immune from everything, even if the child beside him's had zero vaccinations, correct? Well, yeah, technically so, I guess, because my kid's protected from it. I said, okay, then why do they care if somebody's choice is to not vaccinate their children? Well, I'm not really sure. You know, she just told me that it got all stuttered, and I was like, okay, you're not making any sense. You're telling me that if they're vaccinated, they're 100% protected, and you have nothing you have to worry about. If they're not vaccinated, they have all these issues. So if you are vaccinated, then why do you care what anybody else does? Because you're basically 100% immune. So do you think? But see, that's not the truth. They know that all these kids, a lot of cases, when you hear about these measles epidemics and these other issues where this stuff spreads, 99% of the time when you find out who it was, who basically was patient zero, who started it, it was somebody that was vaccinated almost every single time. And then there may be a kid that's unvaccinated that catches the measles or catches the chicken pox in the middle of it, and they get drug into it. And then there's the one kid that they bring out, and they go, well, this kid, he didn't have his up-to-date immunizations. Well, he was like the sixth person that came in that basically contracted measles after this whole incident started. So how could you even link anything back to them at all? You got to look at patient zero that started the whole epidemic and figure out if they were vaccinated or not. And 9.9 times out of 10, it was always somebody that was vaccinated. So do your own research on it, guys. Figure out what you need to do and make the best decision for it as well. Also, too, this is a kind of a weird topic, but I wanted to kind of address it today out in California just because this is starting to get so weird. And I hate talking about it because it's weird topic, but this is how far everything's starting to go down the line now. They've now opened up a transgender day camp in California, calling it Rainbow Day Camp. Part of it's conventional, kids hanging out, playing basketball, but what they're saying is now they cater to transgender and gender fluid children ages 4 to 12. They're saying it's one of the only camps of its kind in the world open to preschoolers, and they want to have Rainbow Camp there to keep it a safe, fun place for these kids. The sad part is the camp's enrollment has now tripled since it opened the end of 2015, and plans are underway to open up another branch next summer in, of course, Colorado. This is what's really strange now, is that we're seeing this massive, it's almost an epidemic, of kids that literally can barely read and write, that are basically coming out now and saying, well, I'm a girl, well, I'm a boy, or I'm gender fluid, meaning I'm a boy one day, I'm a girl one day, I just kind of float around. This type of stuff that they're doing right here with this day camp that caters to transgender children is a serious issue. Not right now as we're seeing this, but in the next 10 to 15 years when this younger generation comes up from below us, it's going to be a very, very strange world that we're about to live in very, very shortly if we allow this stuff to keep going on. These are not places that I would ever support. They're not places that I would ever even condone taking your children to. The problem is, as you just saw, heard, they've grown three times of what they were since 2015, and now they're opening up another branch, which meaning the parents are condoning this type of weird behavior. Four-year-olds are not making the $1,000 a month payment per child to go to a gay, transgender daycare, day camp. They're not. They're not doing it. The parents are the ones that are sending their kids there, meaning we have this generation of idiotic, blithering morons that want to take their kids there so their kids can be a girl or a boy every day. This is going to come back to bite us in the butt really, really bad, guys, and I really wish there was something more I could do about it except just bring it up in the air. They haven't done this in Florida yet, thank goodness. Of course, they started in California. Now they want to take it to Colorado because Colorado's pretty much turned into the new California, unfortunately. Right. But this is pretty bizarre, Dad, so I just kind of wanted to bring that up today and touch base on it just because it was weird.
Child abuse. It's child abuse. It's psychiatric child abuse. It's psychiatric torture is what it is. And quite frankly, you're telling a four-year-old that they're gender fluid and that's okay, and they can be whatever they want to be, a girl today and a boy tomorrow. I mean, your brain's not designed to handle that kind of garbage. And it's just psychiatric child abuse, and it should be completely banned and made illegal for this to be going on with these young children. If they're having camp and the kids are 16, 17, 18 years old or whatever, and they're of legal consent or whatever, and they want to do weird stuff like that, that's one thing, but not with a four-year-old. Oh, by the way, I looked this up real quick, make sure we have the right numbers. 100 fully vaccinated patients for a pediatrician turning two this year will create a $40,000 bonus from Blue Cross Blue Shield to the pediatrician.
Okay.
For vaccination. Okay. If your doctor manages to fully vaccinate 200 patients, the bonus jumps to $80,000 for the pediatrician. So guys, that's some crazy stuff. Those are crazy numbers, and that's a lot of money. And the sad part about it is that they're actually shooting for those goals, and they're setting up those goals. And I can guarantee you they have the reps from these companies coming in and teaching these doctors how to set this up and how to accomplish these goals. You know, a few months ago we had, I'm changing subject, a few months ago we had Robert David Steele on, and he was talking about how many organs were harvested and transferred through the CIA and through the Mossad. Do you remember that, Austin?
Yes.
And because we were talking about the C-130 transport planes, he was saying they're transferring organs, slaves, sex slaves, children, you know, money, cash, drugs, weaponry, all that stuff's being transferred on the 800 lily pad bases that we have around the world, which can go in and be completely not checked out for anything as far as, you know, customs going through. And I just read this article yesterday, and I thought it was interesting, by Ian Greenhall, and it said that Israel, remember this is the Mossad, harvested 18,000 organs from dead Syrians during the war, which I find interesting. Now, I always was taught that some of the organs can't be harvested unless the person is like in a comatose state and still alive. Since the outbreak of the war in 2012, 6.5 million people have been displaced with Syria, and another 4.8 million have become refugees forced to flee neighboring countries like Turkey and Lebanon, or 10% have migrated to Europe with another 386,000 estimated dead. That's 11.7 million humans in Syria who have violently lost their lives or homes, stunningly over half the population of 22 million total. And then it goes on to talk about what's going on with all of these organ harvesting things that are going on out of Israel. And it said in 2001, a BBC report disclosed that Israel per capita, that means per person, stands as the world's largest recipient nation for organ transplants, yet in this country with the fewest organ donors. The problem is additionally compounded by the fact that the Tel Aviv government, including the Minister of Defense, has historically encouraged the practice, only making organ harvesting and trafficking illegal in 2008 on the books. For years, the Israeli healthcare system subsidized kidney transplants and created kidney holiday transplants up to $80,000 in reimbursement for organ recipients to travel abroad for transplants. I mean, guys, this is screwed up stuff. The 1984 law made human organ trafficking illegal in America, but the first case in the U.S. occurred in 2009 when an Israeli citizen living in New York who paid donors in Israel $10,000 was arrested for trying to sell them for $120,000 each to three Americans in need of kidney transplants. We don't realize how much money is being done in organ harvesting, and I didn't understand the extent of this until Robert David Steele talked about it. I found this article that this is a lot of money being put into black ops, into the Mossad, into the CIA, because if you have a kidney and you need a kidney and you have some money and you want to put $100,000 or $200,000 out and you got your life savings and you're fixing to die, you'll spend the money to save the kidney. That's why I tell people, you know, stay away from statin drugs, which destroy kidney function, because it'll destroy kidneys. This Sabbatean group that runs Israel, now if you don't understand that, you need to do some research on it, because remember the Rothschilds through the Balfour Declarations basically have founded Israel, and it's pretty much their, how should I say this, their little hobby country. And what's funny about this is these same guys are the same guys that are giving us the drugs that poison our kidneys and poison our organs that are requiring transplants for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And now we find out that Israel's one of the top places in the world for organ harvesting. This is some weird stuff, guys, and I suggest that you guys do some of your own research on this, because this is some stuff that Robert David Steele said a few months ago, and it's some sick stuff, guys. What do you think, Oz?
No, it is weird, and it makes a lot of sense, though. I mean, that's what a lot of these guys need. I mean, especially some of the lifestyles that they have, they're constantly going through, you know, different organs. Kidneys are going out, livers are going out, and that's there's obviously a huge market for it. So there's no doubt about it. It's pretty strange. Also, too, I haven't talked about this in a while, but the Aqua Bounty genetically modified salmon that got released in Canada this year is apparently taken off very well, as they revealed last week in its quarterly financial results. It has sold approximately 5 tons of the genetically modified salmon fillets in Canada. They said this is the world's first sale of GM fish for human consumption and has occurred without GM product labeling for Canadian consumers, which I have a huge problem with. I talked about this when they actually allowed it for human consumption. They didn't do any significant long-term research on what this is doing to either the ecosystem nor the human body, and they did not require it to be even labeled on the bag. So you don't even know if you're getting farm-raised salmon. You don't know if you're getting GM farm-raised salmon. You don't know if you're getting fresh salmon. You have no idea. They're not doing anything for it. Basically, no one except Aqua Bounty knows where the GM salmon are. That's one thing about it. The company does not disclose where the GM salmon fillets are sold or for what purpose. And basically, everybody's shocked that they've entered the market so swiftly and so aggressively. There's a photo online that basically shows it's been 18 months. They show 18-month salmon. Normal farm-raised salmon at 18 months is 13 inches and averages 2.8 pounds at 18 months. The GM salmon is averaging 24 inches and 6.6 pounds, literally almost twice the length and more than twice the weight of a regular salmon at 18 months. Now, that may not seem like an issue because a lot of people are going to go, oh, well, it means it's going to yield more meat. It's going to do better for this. That's fantastic on paper. The problem is what nobody's looking into is what happens when these things enter the ecosystem. Right now, apparently, they're supposedly in controlled areas. They're basically in sealed farms. what happens if these things get out in the wild and they're completely uncontrolled? They're going to completely devastate and eliminate the natural salmon population if they grow to this level, this fast, that aggressively. Secondly, we have no idea, as I just said before, what the long-term side effects are going to be of eating genetically modified meat that's farm-raised. We really don't know. And why in the world did these guys possibly get this stuff approved without any type of long-term research or at least being required to label it, Dad? This is another one of those under-the-table backdoor collusion things, in my opinion, with these guys getting this stuff passed. So kind of creepy, but just wanted to give you an update on the Aqua Bounty genetically modified salmon since I haven't talked about it in a while. It's apparently doing very good in sales, and the problem is, like I said, nobody knows at all where it is, where it's going, what packaging it is, what, you know, who's selling it, nothing. It's completely undisclosed. Only the owners of Aqua Bounty know exactly where this stuff is.
I don't even know what to say about this. All I know is this. I won't even eat farm-raised salmon. If it's not wild caught, I don't want to mess with it. I don't want to put all the parasites in a regular salmon in my system. When we were having breakfasts over in Europe for the last 2 weeks, we only found two restaurants there that had a breakfast buffet in the hotel that actually had wild salmon on the buffet. The only two out of the dozen or so, 10 or so we stayed in. Because it's expensive. You know, wild salmon, it costs more than farm-raised salmon, and I'm sure that's the main reason they're introducing this product, is because now they can start dumping it into the market as salmon and not disclose that it's genetically modified and probably massively increase the profits. By the way, I haven't talked about this for a while. I wanted to mention this, and it's about melatonin in the body. Melatonin is incredibly important, but it's produced by the fluoride, by the pineal gland, and fluoride causes calcification of the pineal gland. And when that happens, something very unfortunate happens, in that your body starts to age very, very, very quickly because it calcifies the pineal gland. So make sure that you're taking potassium iodide every day and that you do not use fluoride in anything. No mouthwash, no toothpaste, nothing. Make sure you stay away from all of that stuff, because, guys, you don't want to put fluoride in your body in any concentrations, because it's basically rat poison, and just stay away from it. Austin, what do you think?
No, you're absolutely right. I did detail in fluoride a couple of weeks ago because one of Lana's friends actually works for a company that's what they do. They fluoridate water supplies, municipal water supplies, and they make a lot of money doing so. And she works for them, and she refuses to drink anything that has fluoride in it or any bottled water. Everything she does is distilled or reverse osmosis, and she's super picky because she sees, and she didn't know this before she started working with them, but now she sees when this stuff comes in on the tanker trucks and it's got the corrosive labels and the toxic labels and how they have to handle this stuff and how unbelievably deadly this stuff is. Not just dangerous, this stuff is deadly. If you're moving a 55-gallon barrel of straight fluoride, you know, it spills on you, I mean, and you're unprotected, it will kill you. It's that corrosive. And so, I mean, that's how nasty this stuff is, and they put it in the water supply supposedly to protect our teeth. But I went into detail a couple weeks ago on what fluoride actually does and the long-term negative health effects that it has on the body on multiple different levels. So definitely go back and listen to that if you guys want to, and check that out. Also, too, I was going back to vaccines now. There's basically a big push now, as I've talked about, over in Europe now, with Italy, with Australia as well now. They're quickly pushing on stuff. At the end of July, Italy's parliament approved a mandatory, if controversial, course of 10 vaccines to be given to children. Remember, I talked about it as far as what they were trying to do. Apparently, the end of July, they approved it. Italy's parliament fully approved it now for 10 different vaccines to be fully mandated for children under the ages of 16. No exemption forms will be given, for which parents must produce in order to enroll kids in school or face a fine of 500 euros for non-compliance. German officials did not prohibit refusing immunization, but did turn teachers into snitches now of parents into potential criminals by imposing an inordinate fine up to 2,500 euros against those who refuse to vaccinate kids from their doctor, who basically says they need to have it. So this is where it's going now. France also intends to deem 11 vaccine mandatories by next year. Australia's already done the same. all these guys now are starting to try and forcefully vaccinate you by financial means. So if you don't vaccinate your kids, they're going to start fining you large amounts of money, which is significantly unconstitutional in the United States. So we'll have to do the best we can. If Congress gets a wild hair to start pulling this unbelievably unconstitutional crap like they did with the Russian sanctions, we're going to have to absolutely blow up their email, fax machines, and phones to make sure they do not even come close to allowing some type of mandatory vaccination level on this level. The states can do it if they want to do it. I can't say much about that as far as states' rights. California's already started doing that along with a couple other states. But as far as if this goes on a federal level like it's done on multiple other countries now, this is definitely something we are not going to allow to have happen, because once this starts cascading and it starts snowballing, there is no level that these guys will stop at once they can start forcibly mandating that your children have to be vaccinated.
You know, it's crazy, Austin. I didn't vote on it. It's garbage. I mean, it's like we talked the other day. I mean, why don't these people, like, put it out for a popular vote, you know, and just say, should we force people mandatory vaccinations? Of course, if we did that, there's so many stupid people out there, they would probably vote it in anyhow. And I hate to say that about people, but it's the truth, because they're so uneducated. Not necessarily that they're stupid, but they're uneducated. They haven't been brought up to speed on this product and this devastating effects of this product, of these vaccines. By the way, the eradication of poppies has been close to zero now in the world's biggest producer of heroin, Afghanistan. But not to be discounted, Mexico is now massively producing heroin also. So not only are we getting it out of Afghanistan, we're now getting it out of Mexico. So I guess the CIA has to continue to run their drug money and fund their covert operations. Guys, thank you so much for supporting Health Masters. Thank you for being here. Thanks for listening to the show today. I love you guys. Thanks for getting your multiple vitamins from us. Thanks for getting your B vitamins and C and D and E and all the other things. Thanks for praying for us. And thanks for being here for us. And thanks for being part of our family. I'll do the summary today, Austin. God bless you guys. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Absolutely, guys. Appreciate it, bud. And, yes, you guys need anything, check our website out, healthmasters.com, and be sure to check out the product of the week and all the different other things we have on there. I know school's starting back here in the next couple weeks, so I highly recommend you keep the kids' immune system strong, whether it's private school, public school, home school, regardless. Gonna be a lot of people running around now, a lot of people getting little minor colds and stuff. So make sure you're staying up on the vitamin C and the D3. You can also throw in the astragalus, the viral graphis, and the black seed oil if you want to add some additional ones in there. But also be sure to keep your hands washed. Your hands washed, your kids' hands washed, all that stuff. Don't be putting stuff in your mouth or touching your eyes or touching your nose. That's how a lot of stuff gets in your body very, very aggressively, very quickly. So be sure to practice good hygiene and keep your immune system strong and bolstered up with all the stuff that's going on right now with kids starting back school. As we've talked about earlier, the magnesium oil is on sale as product of the week. Today will be the last day it's on sale. It'll be changing over tomorrow to whatever new product is basically voted in. And right now we've had some pretty big votes on a couple different products, including the B-Complex and the chelation. So be sure to go on there and cast your vote and let us know what you want. So if you guys need anything, email us, healthmasters.com, or call us, 1-800-726-1834. You guys have a blessed, safe night, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow as always.